base account and sent the final message. Missouri prosecutors declined to bring the case, finding Drew's actions were reprehensible but not illegal. The U.S. attorney filed the case in Los Angeles, where MySpace is based. For NPR News, I'm Steve Julian in Los Angeles.
In a Virginia courtroom this morning, former pro football star quarterback Michael Vick pleaded guilty to a state dogfighting charge. That plea could hasten his prison release and his return to the NFL. Right now, Vick is serving time on a federal dogfighting conviction. Police have captured a man suspected of killing two people at a New Jersey church on Sunday. He was arrested late last night in Georgia. I'm Paul Brown, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 423 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce emissions. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Coming in January, there will be three opportunities to enjoy the Russian National Ballet Theater performing the timeless story, Sleeping Beauty. More information is at KrannertCenter.com. Support for today's broadcast is provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 15 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of cheeses, olive oil, balsamic vinegar, spices, chocolates, cookies, and more. Catering services are also available. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. This is the day that you can call in and talk about your car. We're happy to have back on the show once again Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. We try to have him here every season, at least, to give you the chance to call in and ask questions. If you're having a car problem, call in, tell us the make and the model, and give us the best description that you can, and Rick will see if he can figure out what might be wrong and tell you what you can do to approach the problem. And if you have other kinds of general questions about car care, car maintenance, we can do that too. 333-9455 is the number if you're going to call in here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll free 800-222-9455. At any point here, if you've got questions, you can give us a call. Thanks very much again for being here. I thought one of the things we could do is just talk about general maintenance. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about was coolant. And it seems to me that when I was a kid, it was a regular maintenance thing that people flushed their radiator a lot of people, I think, flushed it out every year and replaced the coolant every year. And it seems like we don't do that anymore. And we probably talked about this before. Is that something different about the coolant? Is it something different about the system of the car that's now not something that you have to do every year?
Well, it's the chemistry of the coolant. It doesn't break down. Some of the coolants are 5 year, some are 100,000 mile. But the important thing about coolant is, with the newer vehicles, every manufacturer has their own idea about what kind of coolant should be in the car. So you need to consult your owner's manual and make sure you put the proper coolant in there that they specify. And anytime you purchase coolant, it needs to be diluted half and half, half coolant, half water, and that protects it to negative 34 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay. And that's just tap water that you use?
Yes. Here, our water, I mean, if you live in a well or something, you know, if well water, you don't want to use that because of the iron.
Yeah.
But the city water is fine.
Okay. So then check the manual, use whatever coolant it says, and then I'm sure that it also says when they want you to change it.
It's all specified in there. And one of the most important things about checking coolant, a lot of times if you look under the hood and you want to check it yourself, a lot of cars will have like a translucent bottle, and you can actually see there's a minimum mark and there's a maximum mark. Mm. If there's not something like that, you never, ever want to remove the radiator cap or that recovery bottle cap when it's hot. The cooling system is under pressure anywhere from 14 to 16 PSI to help elevate the boiling point. And the pressure that's in there, if you release the cap, the fluid in there is typically, we allow cars to get up to 220 degrees now for emission purposes, that you're going to get burned.
Yeah.
So never remove it when it's hot.
Okay.
Just do that first thing in the morning. And when you release the cap, do it slowly, and you'll hear it release pressure as you do that.
Now, you can, if you want to check the effectiveness of your coolant, you can go down to the auto parts place or to hardware store or whatever, and you can buy a thing that will do that.
Correct.
Is that something – do you think it's worth people doing that just to make sure that it's ready to go?
No, because any time you take a car in for an oil service or as long as you're keeping current on maintenance, that's going to get checked. And if you have a concern about it, when you drop your cars off and you hand the keys to them, just say, could you please let me know what the coolant's protected to? And also ask for the – they can tell by the condition of the fluid also and whether it does need to be serviced. And typically when it needs servicing, if it's not an age-related or time-related issue, it's just a visual observation of the color of the fluid.
Another fluid issue, and this is one of those things that I think maybe people don't think about it until it's not there anymore, and that's the washer fluid. The thing that when you squirts out to clean off the windshield. And I'm sure I'll bet anything that that's something that people don't maybe pay that much attention to, but then the day comes, and I think it's probably – maybe more critical in the wintertime than it is in the summertime. When they turn the thing on and hope that it'll come off and clean off the windshield. And
it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Yeah, you can. I mean, if you use it a lot, you're going to empty the reservoir before it's time for an oil service. So, you buy a jug of it. It's not very expensive, and it's very easy to add to the container. Typically, the reservoir is labeled. It'll look like a picture of a windshield with a little spray droplets on it, so it's pretty easy to find it.
Yeah. Is that the same product essentially for year round use?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
What do you do, or is there something that much you can do if the little nozzles that this stuff squirts out of are frozen over? Do you just have to wait till the car warms up so that they get unfrozen?
Yes, you do. You could pour some water over it if you want. A lot of times the nozzles will get plugged up as well from wax, and you can just take like a safety pin and clean that nozzle out. Some of them require removal of the hose from the nozzle, removal of the nozzle from the hood, and use compressed air to blow in both directions to clean it.
And that's your wax from people running them through car washes?
Typically it's hand waxing. The paste wax that gets in the nozzles. Mm-hmm. And the other thing people should be aware of is those things are adjustable. You can aim them. So in other words, if it's squirting into the car behind you, which a lot of cars are, you know, they can be adjusted. And they should hit the windshield.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I have seen it where they at least they've squirted all the way over and they're falling on your back window.
Correct.
Which is probably not all that helpful. Okay, well, whatever questions you have about your car, Rick and I can sit here and chat, but to be most helpful for you, if you have a car issue, you can give us a call, 333-9455, and that's for Champaign-Urbana, and we do have toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. That's 800-222-9455. Probably one other thing we ought to remind people is check the condition of their wiper blades. Clean them if they need to be cleaned, or maybe you might want to think about getting new ones.
Right. Probably the simplest way there is, do they leave streaks as they sweep? Do they chatter or hop? Mm-hmm. They need to be replaced. Mm-hmm. It's a rubber component. It deteriorates with age and becomes brittle or hard, and that's when they start doing that. They just need to be replaced. And most parts stores we'll install them for you at no charge as long as you buy the product from them. So it's not a big expense.
Yeah. Various, you can do what you say. There are a lot of aftermarket brands of blades, and there are some that I'm sure claim that they do a better job mm-hmm. than others. Is there a particular reason to go to your manufacturer and get one that's specifically for your car, or is that – can you go down to AutoZone or wherever it is you buy? You can buy that kind of thing and just say, this is the kind of car I have. I need some wipers and think that and expect that they'll do a good enough job.
Well, yes, you can. I'd say maybe 80%. You can go to a parts store and acquire. A lot of the exotic cars, we have to special order the wiper blades. If you go into a parts store and you're going to get wiper blades, I would encourage you to pay a little extra money and get the Teflon blade. They last a lot longer.
Okay.
So
What's your average cost for wiper blades these days?
It's about $11 a blade.
That's not terribly expensive.
No. Okay. I mean, it's a safety issue.
All right. We now have several callers. Let's talk with them. Start out here with somebody who is in Champaign and our line number one right here.
Good morning.
Hello. Yeah, hi.
I was just wondering about recommendations on power steering fluid, whether you should use that with conditioner that, you know, supposed to condition the rubber seals and that, or if you're better just using the regular recommended power steering fluid. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, you should just use the normal fluid that's recommended by the manufacturer. There's no reason to add any additives or conditioners. Typically, if you're adding some kind of additive, whether it be to power steering, to engine, to coolant, you're trying to fix a problem. So it's not necessary. If it was a good idea or a long-term idea that would help in terms of longevity, the manufacturers would do that, and they don't do that.
All right. Next up, somebody on a cell phone, line number two. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you just fine.
Well, I have an 01 Pontiac Bonneville, and after a recent tire rotation, I noticed I can't get the traction control to come on, and I didn't know if that was related to the tire rotation or perhaps just a fuse.
It shouldn't be related to the tire rotation.
Okay, because the light won't come on, and then the anti-lock brake light comes on. So would that be a fuse, do you think?
No, it's not a fuse. Oh, so the anti-lock brake light is on.
And that is on as well, yes.
Yeah, the traction
control will not come on.
That's correct. It will not work. You have to solve the problem with the anti-lock brake system first.
Okay. I'll just take it into the dealer.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next is somebody else on a cell phone, and this is line three. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Quick general question. Folks try very hard to sell me an extended maintenance contract on my car after the manufacturer's warranty has run out, and my feeling is if they try that hard to sell it to me, it's probably not a good buy. I would appreciate your comments on maintenance contracts in general. Thank you.
Okay.
He hung up. The number one thing, yes, they do try to push that because that's a huge profit item. Some of these extended maintenance programs that I've seen that customers have brought in are, they start at $1,000 and they'll go up from there. You have to read them very, very carefully. They have all kinds of different plans. When I say A, B, C, D, A being the best and D being the minimum, you just have to read it. Some of them aren't worth the money at all. Mm-hmm. So if you have a question about it, I would definitely take a copy of it to someone that you trust that works on your car and present it to them and ask questions about it and say, what do you think about this? Because a lot of them, and some of them even go so far as if you have four problems, each problem has a deductible. So, you know, if you bring it in several times over the course of the contract, you're really not saving much money unless you have a major issue. But the key thing, again, is to read it carefully and have someone else read it for you that's familiar with cars. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, you know, if you look at it and look at Consumer Reports. Consumer Reports is an excellent publication as far as accuracy, maintenance repair costs. In other words, it has little circles in the book, and it'll show you specific year, specific model. And if you go down the list and you see a lot of black, you shouldn't buy that car anyhow. Mm-hmm. But then maybe the maintenance contract is worthwhile. But I'm not going to say yes or no. I'm just going to say make sure you read it.
Okay. All right. Next caller is in Newton, line four on the toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of grades of that washer fluid. There's a summer grade that's cheaper. So you got to be careful. You put that stuff in there and it gets cold and you're going to be surprised.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Well, again, I just it's a good thing, you know, before don't just pick up the bottle and walk out with it. read what it says on the label, and it may I would hope that in that particular case it would say, you know, either this is good for if it's below freezing or not.
Right. Most of them do say that on the outside. I guess I haven't run across that before. I just always buy the better product, so I wasn't aware that there was a summer blend.
Okay. Well, maybe it's, again, it's another case where maybe it's not, you don't probably want to buy the cheapest one that you can find. All right. Well, I thank the caller for the tip. Let's go on to Sullivan, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have a 2006 Ford Focus, and I need to buy some new tires for it. And currently I have low-profile performance tires on there, and I wondered if I could go ahead and change the tire size to save me a little bit of money, or if that's going to cause any problems or damage to my car.
Well, what I would suggest is you go to TireRack.com.
Okay.
And you can enter the vehicle and all the different information in there. And it'll help you sort through tires. There'll be reviews on there. There'll be recommendations. And you can kind of adjust your choice to your driving habits. And then obviously you can call them and talk to them as well if need be. But this is an excellent source for that type of information that you're asking about.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Right, sure.
Thank you. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Rick Karch is our guest. He's the owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign. And every once in a while he's here on the program, we talk about car care. So if you got some kind of problem or you have some kind of more kind of general maintenance question, call us and Rick will do his best to help you out. Again, 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk about tires. That's also an important issue. It's important any time, but it's particularly important, I think, during the winter time. What should you look for if you are looking at your tires and you're asking yourself, are these tires good to go or should I be thinking about replacing them?
Well, the number one thing you'd look at is the tread depth. In between the high edges of the tire, there's like slots or cleats. Mm-hmm. And at the bottom of those cleats, if you look carefully, you'll see what's referred to as a wear bar that goes perpendicular. And as that wear bar nears the surface of the tire that contacts the road, it needs to be replaced. And you can measure that. It's also a pretty simple thing to look at visually. And the other thing, depending upon the age of the tires, if you look at the sidewall areas and you see any cracks in the sidewalls and the cracks in the tire itself, they should definitely be replaced. If you've got any questions whatsoever about tires, since it's obviously a safety issue, if you go to any tire store, they're going to be more than happy to come out and measure the tires for you and make recommendations.
Okay. And are you, I guess if you were really jaundiced about it, you'd say, well, of course they're going to want to sell me tires. Aren't they going to, is the chance that you do that, they're going to say, well, yeah, we think you should have new tires.
Well, depending on how they measure, I mean, if you get down to 230 seconds, you should definitely consider replacing them. And okay. This is the time, this is an excellent time to do that because obviously the more tread, the better the traction, the less likely you are to getting stuck. And tire pressures are also very important. If the last time you checked your tire pressure was in May when it was 80 or 90 degrees out, yeah. Ambient temperature is going to decrease the pressure, so it's going to be less.
Yeah. And that's something that we've certainly talked about before is that having your tires at the recommended pressure is going to have an impact on your mileage. So that – and certainly now – people, I would think, even though gas is less expensive than it was this past summer, people are still wanting to get the most miles they can out of the car. So that's something that's definitely going to affect your mileage in addition to it being a safety issue.
Correct. And, of course, longevity of the tire, the wear of the tire. And when you look at your tires, in addition to looking at the tread depth, you just kind of look at the wear across the tire. The wear should be even. If there's prominent wear on the inside edge or the outside edge and it's smooth wear and it's excessive compared to the rest of the tire, that indicates an alignment problem. The other thing that indicates an alignment problem is if you run your hand across the tire, in other words, from the outside of the tire to the inside of the tire, and if it's smooth going one way and kind of rough coming back the other way, that's another indication of an alignment problem.
Mm-hmm.
So those things can be looked at as well.
And how often do you have the tires rotated?
Well, a lot of the manufacturers will specify anywhere from 5,000 to 7,500 miles, but the best thing to do is to measure the tires. In other words, if the front tires have less tread than the rears, then they need to be rotated. So if you measure them before you rotate them.
And is it just a normal thing that you could expect the tires are not all four tires are just not going to wear evenly?
Well, typically the prominent wear occurs on the front tires. Because as we decelerate and brake, the weight gets transferred to the front tires. A lot of the front-wheel drive cars, of course, they weigh more in the front. Mm-hmm. So the prominent wear typically occurs on the front tires.
There's a lot of difference in price of tires. I mean, you can buy cheap tires and then you can buy really expensive tires. What are you getting when you're paying more?
Well, typically you're getting increased expected life. You know, you can go in, you can buy a 40,000 miles tire, a 50,000, 60,000. So I would definitely choose what you can afford. And mm-hmm. in the long run, if you're going to keep the car, then you need to look at the higher mileage tire. It's the quality of the rubber that affects the longevity of the tire. I mean, if you're only going to keep the car for a couple of years, then there's no reason to spend that extra money.
Does the kind of driving you do, say, particularly if you're doing a lot of highway driving and high speeds, as opposed to maybe most people who do in-town driving, and they probably could never get the car much over 40 or 45 miles an hour, does that make much difference in terms of tire wear?
Well, in-town driving is going to be a lot harder. You're going around corners. Typically what wears tires out the fastest is excessive weight transfer. So if we try to see how fast we can go around corners, there's a lot of weight transfer to that outside of the turn, prominent loading of the tire, increased wear. Highway is very easy on tires because we're just basically rolling down the road. We're not stopping, turning. Mm-hmm. So they'll definitely last longer if you have a car that's driven on the highway 80% of the time versus an in-town car. You're going to get more longevity out of your tires.
We've got a caller here lined up. If you have a car question, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Someone on a cell phone, line number one. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
We recently bought four new tires, and we're advised to have the alignment done soon. And we haven't had a chance to do that, and now we're planning to drive a few hundred miles each way for Thanksgiving. And I'm wondering how crucial it is to get the alignment done before we take a trip like that.
Well, is it just a matter of your schedule as far as getting the alignment done?
Yeah.
Okay. And the people you bought the tires from, do they do alignments?
No, they don't do alignments.
Okay. All right. On what they saw with tire wear, they obviously saw something or they wouldn't have made this recommendation.
Uh-huh.
So I would try to get it done. If you can't get it done, then you can't get it done, but you should do it.
What will be the result? I mean, what would be the effects on the car of not having it done before we take a trip?
Well, there's a possibility that you could wear the tires out sooner.
Uh-huh. I see.
So
we definitely should have it done when we get back.
I think so because, like I said, they made that suggestion for a reason.
Uh-huh.
And since they don't sell alignments, they obviously felt it necessary.
Yeah, they made it based on the wear of the old tires.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, does the car go down the road straight?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It does. It makes kind of a noise, though, like, I don't know, just very kind of a loud tire noise, kind of, when you're driving fast. So, you know, we kind of thought maybe something wasn't even or something like that.
Well, if you've got a loud noise, maybe you're referring to a wheel bearing. The next time you drive the car, if you find a road that allows you to swerve, in other words, kind of swerve to the right and swerve to the left and see if that noise changes.
Huh.
And okay. One, if it's a wheel bearing, let's just say for an example that it's the left front wheel bearing. When we weave to the right, it's going to be louder. If we weave to the left, it's actually going to go away because the weight is going to be transferred off of that bearing that's bad. So if you're here, it typically occurs above 35 mile an hour?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. More than likely, it's a wheel bearing.
What kind of noise would that make, a wheel bearing?
Kind of a growling noise, kind of a prominent humming noise, maybe, is another way to explain it.
Yeah.
But if you weave, as you unload that bad bearing, the noise will go away. And that's the easiest way to identify a wheel bearing.
Uh-huh. And that would be in the front.
Well, okay. It could be the rear also.
Uh-huh.
But by weaving, you'll know right away.
Well, we were planning to take it to the dealer for the alignment, so we could ask them to look at the wheel bearing, too.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Right, we're about midway through this first hour of Focus 580. Rick Karch is our guest. He's an auto mechanic. His business is Rick's Automotive in Champaign, and periodically he's here on the program to talk about car maintenance. And if you have a question, call us, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Urbana, line 2.
Hi, can you tell me about batteries and maintenance? Because I know that there's supposedly no maintenance versus low maintenance batteries. And when I take my car in for the lubrication, you know, oil change and whatever, they tell me that, oh, they don't need to check the battery because it's no maintenance. But then I know that you can also take the top off the battery. And I know my dad had told me that, you know, don't believe that no maintenance batteries are no maintenance batteries. If you can take the top off, that they can still go low on water. And so I've started adding water, but I'm wondering, is that something that's unnecessary, or what's the deal with that?
Well, yeah, you're right. If there's removable caps, you need to check the level, and you need to make sure that it's above the plates that you see in there. And you can, there's a little, like a level indicator that when the fluid level is right, the surface tension will change the appearance of the...
There's a little dimple.
Right. It'll change the appearance of it. So, yeah, you need to keep an eye on that. As far as servicing or maintenance is concerned, other than that, you just need to make sure the terminals are clean. If there's corrosion buildup on there, you can use baking soda and water and a toothbrush and clean those. Ideally, you should remove them from the battery and clean the backside of the terminals, just because just cleaning the exterior is not cleaning the actual connection.
Right. I understand that.
So that needs to be done. And you need to be careful. A lot of these new cars, and you have to be really careful. I won't even disconnect a battery cable anymore in a car unless I have some other supplemental power supply to the car. Because then you end up losing the code for the radio. Then you got to fumble around and try to find the code and figure out how to program it in. And there's just so many things on these new cars that gets lost when you disconnect a battery. So it's you need a supplemental power supply if you do something.
I think a lot of people aren't aware that the water in the battery still needs to be checked, because I don't think most fluid places, like the oil change places, do that on a regular basis.
I don't think they do. I think
correct. I think a lot of batteries go bad before their time because of that. So it's just maybe a heads up to other listeners.
Right. Yeah. And again, not all batteries are that way as far as the
ability. There really is no such thing as a no maintenance battery.
Well, yes, there are in terms of when we're referring to adding water.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are.
Okay.
There are sealed batteries.
Totally sealed.
Correct.
All right.
And most batteries, typical recommendation that we use is every 5 years, you replace it, whether you need it or not. It can be load tested. You put a load on the battery, and as far as the battery voltage is concerned, you monitor what it drops down to. If it drops down to 9.6 volts or less, it needs to be replaced. Another good indicator, too, of a battery issue is if you drive a car enough, you kind of get a sense of when you turn the key to operate the starter motor, how it turns over. And you can kind of tell when it's turning a little bit slower, and that's a good indication that you need to have the battery checked.
I remember my dad always cautioned me that if you live in town that you should get your car out on the road for a good 20 minutes to a half hour every now and then if you don't take the car on usual long trips in order to recharge your battery.
Right.
That's still the case? Or is that
that's true. They'll get what they refer to as sulfated, and they just won't accept a charge as readily.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a good recommendation, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks
a lot. Thank you. Bye. Our guest this morning, Rick Karch. He's an auto mechanic. He's here periodically on the program. We talk about car care, and if you got a problem, give us a call. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Anything else general that you would want to say about batteries? Or is that just pretty, other than, every, what I said, 5,000 miles, just even if you think that it's fine, you would say, get a new one.
Every 5 years.
I'm sorry, every 5 years.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
do you work for a battery company?
No, I have no interest. Yeah, that would be kind of excessive, wouldn't it, every 5,000 miles? That's like every time you change your oil, get a new battery. No, every 5 year. Okay, every 5 years.
Every 5 years, right. No, the only other thing is to make sure the battery is mounted securely. If the battery has the ability to move around or bounce, that's hard on the battery internally. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be securely mounted. Other than that, in terms of batteries, no. It's one of those things you just don't really think about.
Until the car won't start, and then.
So if you just remember every 5 years, and if you get into that routine, it's easy to remember.
Yeah. Well, and it's also interesting, and we've talked about this when you've said actually people think about. If you think about having problems with batteries in the wintertime and the car not starting, you've said that actually high temperatures, summer is harder on the battery than it is when it's cold.
Correct.
But it seems like if you're going to have a problem with the car starting, it seems inevitably that it's in the wintertime. I don't know that people have that many problems with the car starting in the summer.
Yeah. So, I guess the only other thing in terms of winter areas that most people don't realize is that when you put your heater on defrost, what removes all that moisture is actually the air conditioner. Mm-hmm. So if the air conditioning is not working on the car, it's not going to remove the moisture as quickly. And the other thing in the winter, if you have an issue with a component, referred to as a heater core, which is kind of like a small radiator that the coolant goes through and the air goes through that, and of course it is warmed as it goes through the fins of that radiator, is that if there's a leak in the heater core, you're going to have a real peculiar odor in the car. You may even also notice fluid on the passenger's floor, maybe even the driver's floor. Mm-hmm. And that's an indication that the heater core is leaking. It's not a real common problem. It's, except on cars that have some age to them. But the air conditioning is important in the winter.
Okay. Again, other questions, welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I've plenty of time for other questions here with Rick Karch, so if you got a problem, you can give us a call. I was just thinking, going back to the alignment issue, if you're driving along and you're in a place where the road is going straight and you can do this safely, if you're driving along, should you be able to take your hands off the wheel and the car should continue to go straight?
As long as it's a fairly level road. Most roads are crowned, meaning it's higher in the middle. And the reason for that is that when it rains, the water
runs on,
goes off the side of the road. But yes, you're correct.
Okay. So that would be if it has a tendency to pull to one side or another,
that's a good indication that the alignment is
off.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We have several other callers here. Let's go back and I have several Champagne people, so we'll take them in the order that they came in, and we'll start with line one right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I have a question about – I have a 97 Avalon that has 170,000 miles on it. We have not had a lot of problems with it, but I'm just wondering, we're just – how much longer – how long does a car run?
Well, that particular car, as long as you keep up with the maintenance, it'll last a long time. I mean, as far as giving you a specific mileage, I don't
Well, I know you couldn't give me a specific mileage, but
those cars, I'm sure.
But 200,000 miles is not unusual, huh?
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, wow.
No.
Okay.
No, it's an excellent product.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, thank you. And then we'll go to line two. This is also somebody in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have, it's a minor problem, but I'm wondering if it's fixable. When I drive and I get to a stop and I put my foot on the brake, I have to keep it on the brake, otherwise it'll keep moving. Also, when I'm driving and I'm in a slow speed area, I just take my foot off the gas pedal and it just goes, you know. So,
what kind of car do you have?
I mean, it slows down.
I understand. So it'll go 25 miles an hour by itself.
Yeah.
So what kind of car is this?
It's a Toyota.
A year of it?
Pardon?
What year is it?
Oh,
approximately.
03.
Okay. Well, you may have a problem. Does it have a tachometer?
Little
needle?
Yes, it does.
Okay, when it's in park or neutral,
yeah.
Where does that needle say?
Oh, I'm trying to think. It's not on zero.
Okay. Is it above one?
Yeah, I have looked. It hovers around one.
Okay. Well, it's a little high.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's an idle speed problem. It shouldn't idle that high in neutral. It
mm-hmm.
should be down around 600 or 700
uh-huh.
RPM.
So, is that fixable?
Oh, sure.
Oh, and is it major, minor?
Well, it's hard to say.
Oh, okay.
Without looking at it.
Sure.
But
okay.
You are correct. You shouldn't have to.
But it's a good idea to have it checked.
I would definitely have that looked at because that affects how the car decelerates in the snow. It may prevent or create an issue.
Uh-huh.
You know, deceleration, because obviously it's going to require you to step on the brakes sooner than you should or need to.
Actually, it's been going on for a long time. I just keep forgetting to mention it.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you. And another caller here. This is also line Champaign in line three. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
You were talking earlier about batteries, and I had a question. We have a couple of hybrid cars, and, of course, the high-voltage battery systems in them are quite different. But is the technology of the hybrid batteries, is that a lead-acid-based technology, or where are we heading in terms of battery technology for hybrids?
Well, I think the last that I remember, those batteries, they keep extending the warranty on them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're originally 8 years, and I think now they may be up to 10 or more.
Yeah.
There's also a supplemental battery in that car.
Right.
And that one is a typical battery as far as lead acid, if you want to refer to it that way.
Yeah.
But battery technology is changing every year.
Okay. So like in our cell phones where they're getting smaller and smaller and more powerful, that is likely to hold true for automotive batteries, do you think?
Yes, it is, particularly the hybrids, because obviously that's one of the big expenses of the car, is those mm-hmm. batteries in the back.
Okay, well, okay. Thank you.
You're
okay,
welcome.
Thanks. And I know that was maybe one concern or one thing that at least people would have to think about when they were buying a hybrid, a gas-electric hybrid, is that periodically, depending on how long you keep the car, you are going to have to replace those batteries, and they're not cheap.
No, they're not. I don't know. The price on them changes constantly. And if you're curious about it, if you just simply call the dealer and ask them how much would the part be,
mm-hmm.
You can also find out how much the labor would be if you're considering purchasing a car like that and it's nearing 10 years old, that would definitely be a question, and that should be a part of your decision-making process,
yeah.
That this expense is going to occur.
Mm-hmm. So how is it that they – you mean for the same car, the same battery, first of all, they said – first they said 8 years, and then they said, well, maybe we think you can go another 2 years on,
no,
on that
battery? No, it was the technology.
Oh, so the newer ones have a longer
life. That's correct.
Life. So the first ones maybe were 8 years. Then you replace it. Then they'd say, okay, then on this next one, you're going to get 10 years.
Or more.
And then I guess the hope would be then you know, if you kept doing that, then you would get longer and longer life out of the batteries as you replace them. Okay. Okay. We got some other callers here. Let's see. Indiana is next. Line four. Hello.
I just wanted to – two questions. I have a Honda CR-V 2005. It's a four-cylinder. And my wife and I are going to travel to Anchorage, Alaska – in June of this coming year, driving back and forth about 8,000 or 9,000 miles when we're done, probably. Question number one is, should I be concerned about that car's ability to do that? And question number two, what precautions, if it's a good fit, what kind of precautions should I take? And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, you can stay there. Hang on.
Okay.
There's not an issue in my mind as far as making the trip. What I would suggest, how many miles are on the car now?
About 42 now and probably closer to 46 by the time we go.
Okay. All right. So, okay, let's just say it's going to have 46 on it when you leave. You're going to go 8,000 miles. So if we add the two together,
yes,
we're going to get 54,000.
Okay.
So what I would suggest is you can do one of two things. You can do I would lean toward doing the 60,000-mile service before you leave.
Okay.
So that all those components and fluids have all been changed before you leave.
Very good. Nice idea.
So you don't have to worry about it on your trip.
Okay. That's very helpful.
Okay.
Anything else?
Tires.
Okay.
Make sure the spare is good.
All right.
And then just the normal other things that are associated with maintenance. Before you leave, when you get that last oil change, obviously you're going to have an oil change somewhere along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would carry a couple quarts or maybe 4 quarts of oil with you, so that maybe an oil filter, so that you happen to be in some small town and they don't have an oil filter that fits your car, at least you've got it. You've got the oil. You know, you can get it dealt with.
That's great.
And that's not going to take up that much space.
That's very good advice. Thank you.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
All right. Very good. Thank you. We'll keep going here. The next is someone in Champaign in line one.
Hello. Hello?
Yeah. Hi.
I just had a question, maybe a little related to the last one. I've been looking around at some of the used cars, and some of the newer ones, have an awfully lot of electronics on them, with particularly high level laser sensors of cars in front, and of course the GPS systems and a lot of fancy stuff. I guess my question is: is everything stable enough that's not going to just become a problem as things break? It seems like with so many of these fancy devices on them, there's a chance that they would become a problem if they're not really stable. What's the status on those these days?
Well, I see more and more of that as these cars age. Those particular areas when they fail or they have problems, it becomes extremely expensive. And, you know, it's getting to the point anymore where you can't even order a car without some of these. You know, it's just part of the car.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you used to be able to order a car without power windows.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Air conditioning. And so, yeah, some of the stuff like the memory of the seats and some of the stuff just makes you wonder.
The older the car gets, the more likely
you're gonna have
those things fail. So.
Well, and not so much if they're going to fail, it's just if they do, the expenses are just ridiculous. And,
mm-hmm.
and then it kind of comes a question of, well, do I really need that? And
mm-hmm.
you know, these power seats that are 6-way, 7-, 8-, 9-way adjustable power seats that have, you know, driver one, driver two, and then you even can have key fobs that are driver one, driver two. So if driver two gets in the car, everything moves, the steering wheel moves, the seat moves. But you're right. It's all things you think about. And then the other thing that that it's interesting about all these components is that computer-oriented, that think about the environment they're in. One day it's zero. One day it's 120. You know, and a computer that's in your house never goes through those things.
Yep.
So, yes, that does affect longevity.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that sounds like something to keep in mind in choosing a car.
Yes, I would definitely. Now, as far as navigation, if you've never had navigation before, I would kind of encourage you to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice. Nice feature.
Yeah, we have one, actually, that it's just a portable one, so we can take it in whatever car we're in.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah.
That works out okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're
welcome. Appreciate your wise words there.
All right. Take care. Thank you. So what do you think now of this feature that some cars have where there's not a key like we're used to, where you take this key and you stick it in a slot like you do in the front door of your house,
right,
that you have some kind of a sensor that you have to have so the car knows it's you and you're there in the car, and then when it comes time to start the car, you just push a button and the car starts.
A lot of them, you don't even, as long as you have the key in your pocket, the car will start. And you can open the doors the same way.
Uh-huh.
All you do is touch the door handle and it unlocks the doors.
Uh-huh.
Again, it's just one of those things that when it goes bad, it's going to be a real problem.
Yeah.
So,
is that something you think is just going to be on more and more cars as a standard feature?
Yes. Well, it's mainly oriented toward anti-theft.
Uh-huh.
It's trying to make it more and more complicated, more things the car has to go through. I mean, some cars you'll have, Mercedes, for example, you'll have the key in your pocket. Well, okay, the key talks to the car. The car talks to a card, like a credit card that's in the glove box somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then it talks to a computer. So you got all this communication process that goes on within the car before the door will unlock.
Uh-huh. And if one part of that's not working right, then you're going to have a problem.
And the doors won't unlock.
So then there's no way to manually unlock them.
Well, some of them do. Some of them will have a little black cap over the handle, and you can pop that cap off, and you have a regular key that separates from your remote. But not all cars have that.
Okay. All right. Let's go on here. We've got a couple more callers. Next is Urbana Line 2. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
I have a 2004 Ford F-150, and I've recently been experiencing like a slight amount of like resistance when I turn the steering wheel. And I've checked my power steering fluid, and it doesn't seem to be losing any. Do you think that's the pump is going bad or something?
Well, let me ask you this question. When you make a turn, and if you let go of the steering wheel, you probably have never done this, but if you let go of the steering wheel after you make the turn, the steering wheel should automatically unwind. In other words, turn the opposite direction back to straight. If it doesn't do that, then one of the steering components is in a bind, whether it be a tie rod end, a ball joint, whatever it may be. But that's a simple test for integrity of the steering components if they're in a bind.
Okay. I guess another question really fast is, what about like shocks and struts? Would that have anything to do with it? And how often should you replace stuff like that?
Well, shocks and struts just simply keep the tire in contact with the road. So if you're on the highway at highway speeds and you hit dips in the road, if the shocks are bad or the struts are bad, the car will keep bouncing after that dip in the road. And it's normal for them to bounce maybe 1 to 2 times and then stop. And if they do that, they're fine.
Okay. So if you basically have a floater, then use time to get new shocks and struts.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. And next caller is also, I think, in Urbana. Yep, line number 3. Hello.
Hi.
I was going to return to the batteries, the sealed and unsealed batteries.
Okay.
A personal observation, cars that have the sealed batteries do not get corrosion in the engine compartment, and the ones that have the unsealed batteries, the gas that comes out causes corrosion. I haven't seen this commented on before, but I've had some vehicles of each kind, and I've never had corrosion in the ones that are sealed, and I've always had corrosion in the ones that are unsealed. Is this worth paying attention to?
Well, it just has to do with vapor rises. So the venting of the battery and the location of the vent affects the corrosion. So the maintenance-type batteries, meaning they have removable caps, they just vent through the cap. So that acid is right there on the top of the battery.
Mm-hmm.
The sealed batteries, they do obviously have to vent in some fashion or another. And some of them even go so far, depending on where the battery is located, if it's in the trunk or if it's under the rear seat, they'll actually have a tube attached to the battery that vents to atmosphere. And you are entirely correct, though. Those batteries, as far as corrosion, you won't see it.
Yeah, it's really a consideration when you're getting a new battery. If it's possible to get a sealed battery,
right,
you're going to have very much less corrosion in your car.
And
yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
So, and is that something that you will be likely to have a choice, that you can either have one or the other, or is the manufacturer going to say, this is, we think you should have one or the other?
Most of the batteries today are maintenance-free.
Okay, they're sealed.
That you purchase, okay. Yes. Now, marine batteries, because they're a deep cycle battery, meaning they can cycle to zero and come back, those do have removable caps. But you're going to see less and less of the maintenance. They call it maintenance free, but like the caller mentioned before, if it has removable caps, there is the ability to check the level and add.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One more at least. Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Just to help my curiosity, if you have a car that has electronics that you don't want to interrupt, could you use one of the jumper batteries, you know, the type that you carry in your trunk, and use it in place of starter cables?
Are you making reference to disconnecting the battery?
Yes.
That's exactly how we do it.
It is?
Yes. Because
so you just hook it onto the cable after you take the cable off?
Well, usually what I do is I find a positive source away from the battery.
I see.
Whether it's the alternator, the large cable on the alternator, mm-hmm. or I'll go right to the fuse box and open the fuse box under the hood and jumper there, because what inevitably happens to me is if you hook it up to the cables and you disconnect them from the battery, you're moving them around, and it seems like the likelihood of the cable popping off is pretty high. So that's why I don't attach there. I go somewhere away from the battery.
And then, of course, the negative you...
any good ground, whether it be the engine block, preferably.
Mm-hmm. I suppose you really should use that rather than the negative terminal on the battery anyway. Or doesn't it make any difference? For starting.
Oh, for starting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a procedure for that. As far as jumper cables?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the dead, you hook up to the car that's not running. And I'm trying to remember the sequence now. I don't remember it exactly right away, but there is a specific sequence of positive and negative.
And that's probably it should be spelled out
in
your
owner's
manual. So don't, look at that before you do it.
But the key that when you have the car, the last connection you make is going to be on the vehicle that's not running.
Yeah. Sorry to jump in on you here, Rick, but I really got to go.
Okay.
We're here at the end. I got one caller we can't take. I'm sure a couple months, maybe Rick will be back. Rick is the owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Programming here made possible by a grant from Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web, TNOL.com. We'll break for an update on the markets. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey. Let's go right to the floor of Kansas City and Chicago. December wheat in Kansas City at 564 and a quarter, down 4.5. At the Board of Trade, December wheat at 535.5, down 2. December corn, 351 and a quarter, down 3.25. March, 368, down 3. July, 390.